Good evening. The Congress passes a stimulus. Cuomo requires COVID tests at the airports. Conservatives throw in the towel on Trump. Apache leaders speak out against the copper mine. McCain's stab in the back. And will the NYPD change its ways, change the ways it polices protests? With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the news for Tuesday, December 22nd, 2020. This is the deadliest year in United States history, with deaths expected to top 3 million for the first time, due mainly to the coronavirus pandemic. President-elect Biden, speaking today, says the worst is yet to come.
Our darkest days in the battle against COVID are ahead of us, not behind us. So we need to prepare ourselves to steel our spines. As frustrating it is to hear, it's going to take patience, persistence, and determination to beat this virus. There'll be no time to waste in taking the steps we need to turn this crisis around.
Preliminary numbers suggest that the United States is on track to see more than 3.2 million deaths this year, or at least 400,000 more than 2019, marking the largest single-year percentage leap since 1918, when tens of thousands of United States soldiers died in World War I and hundreds of thousands of Americans died in a flu pandemic. Meanwhile, last night, the Senate joined the House in passing a $900 billion stimulus package as Americans face the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression struck more than 80 years ago.
The yeas are 91, the nays are 7. The 60-vote threshold having been achieved, the motion to concur is agreed to.
The bill that will bring up to $600 per person in a second stimulus check and extend $300 federal unemployment checks through March. It will also give renters a reprieve for another month. All that's left is for President Donald Trump's signature to make it so. The stimulus, much less than most big city mayors and hard-hit governors want and need, comes amidst the biggest vaccination program in United States history and a resurgence of the disease. And as mutant variants of the disease are shuttering travel to and from the United Kingdom and spreading fears for children in South Africa, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says he just doesn't want a repeat of history.
The UK believes the strain is so serious that Boris Johnson, who said the week before, we're not going to cancel Christmas, we're not going to close, did a 180-degree turn and then closed parts of the UK. It's serious, my friends, and we are on notice about it. Why don't we act intelligently for a change? There are three airlines that come from the UK and fly into our airports. Our airports are run by the Port Authority of New York, New Jersey. The three airlines are British Airways, Delta, and Virgin Atlantic. They daily are bringing several thousand passengers per day. I am asking those airlines to add New York State to the list of the 120 countries that require tests before the flights leave the UK for New York. 120 countries do it. My request is simple. Please add New York to the list of 120 countries. Well, you're not a country. I know that. But as governor of New York State, I have asked them to do that.
Governor Cuomo. As President Trump enters his last 30 days in office, he's reportedly still obsessed with plots to overturn the results of the election, with calls from advisors to seize ballot machines and declare martial law. Some representatives, and possibly a senator, are talking about using their power to force a debate on the election in favor of Trump when January 6th rolls around. That's the key date in the electoral process. There's no chance that tactic could change the results, though. Leading conservatives are seeing the light. Evangelical leader Pat Robertson's, he's among those who say it's time to move on.
Very erratic, and he's fired people, and he's fought people, and he's insulted people, and keeps going down the line. So it's a mixed bag, and I think it would be well to say you've had your day, and it's time to move on.
And Newsmax, a conservative pro-Trump outlet, faces legal demands from Smart Tech and Dominion, two voting machine companies figuring in a conspiracy theory being touted by Trump and some of his lawyers. That led to a breathtaking retraction by Newsmax anchor John Tobacco. Newsman anchor John Tobacco.
Newsmax has found no evidence that either Dominion or Smartmatic owns the other or has any business association with each other. We have no evidence that Dominion uses Smartmatic software or vice versa. No evidence has been offered that Dominion or Smartmatic use software or reprogrammed software that manipulated votes in the 2020 election. Smartmatic has stated that its software was only used in the 2020 election in Los Angeles, was not used in any battleground state contested by the Trump campaign. Newsmax has no evidence to the contrary. Dominion has stated the company has no ownership relationship with the Pelosi family, the Feinstein family, the Clinton family, Hugo Chavez, or the government of Venezuela. Neither Dominion nor Smartmatic has any relationship with George Soros. Smartmatic is a U.S. company and not owned by the Venezuelan government, Hugo Chavez, or any foreign official or entity.
And that's Newsmax anchor John Tobacco. And Biden had something to say about the massive cybersecurity attack that's apparently penetrated sensitive computer networks used by government agencies, including the ones charged with the U.S. nuclear arsenal.
President Trump's irrational downplaying of the seriousness of this attack. Enough's enough. In an age when so much of our lives are conducted online, cyber attacks must be treated as a serious threat by our leadership at the highest levels. We can't let this go unanswered. That means making clear and publicly who is responsible for the attack and taking meaningful steps to hold them in account.
And as President-elect Biden today, Kristen Monahan is a Cyber Vault Fellow at the National Security Archive with expertise in cybersecurity and technology policy. She says at the heart of the problem is the lack of cyber hygiene by billions of computer users.
The hackers had implanted Sunburst, the malware, into the SolarWinds network, and SolarWinds then unknowingly distributed the malware to thousands of its customers, or potentially thousands of its customers, let me be clear, through an update for its Orion program.
Well, they do it to us, we do it to them. Isn't there a feeling of mutually assured destruction in a sense that there's not really much either side can do about this?
Cyber espionage is definitely a part of the modern domain these days, whether it's state-to-state espionage. There is some, obviously, private espionage that happens as well. As for that there's nothing that we can do, there's this idea of layered cyber defense, which is what the Cyberspace Solarium Commission proposes, but it basically relies on layered cyber deterrence. Two of those layers of deterrence are imposing costs and denying benefits, so that imposing costs, if an adversary launches an attack against us, that we have the capability to retaliate and to make it hurt and to make them know it. Denying benefits factor of it is that they're going to launch this attack or they're going to launch a breach and they're not going to get what they came for. They're not going to see their goals actualized.
Are we heading towards like a cyber war, a full-out cyber war where electric grids could go down, dams could be opened, planes could be crashed, things like that? Is that what this is about?
It's definitely a future we need to consider and a future we need to defend against, to be sure.
When two countries start doing this to each other, even though it might be at the level of a joke almost, like leaving a funny name in your secret computer just to make you uncomfortable that people are snooping around your stuff and you can't stop it, that could lead to miscalculations that could start a war or something.
Miscalculations, regardless of domain, whether in the physical domain or in the cyber domain, that is a risk. We guard against that as much as we can. For me, additionally, kind of the added layer in the cyber domain is that cyber tools, cyber attacks definitely don't respect national boundaries. The UK is seeing this malware in some of their private companies. The cyber conflict or cyber operations going back and forth between two adversary nations, there's the ability for that to spread out into the networks of other nations and cause issues.
Should people who are interested in peaceful relationship between nations be as concerned about this as H-bombs and things like that?
Cyber as a realm is all around us, right? It's something that we interact with every day. It's something that we interact with minute by minute, second by second. There are billions of users around the globe. A nation's overall cybersecurity and the overall posture is in part influenced and determined by the education and the awareness of cyber hygiene, for example, of its populations.
No more 123456789 is my password?
No.
They penetrated the NNSA.
They penetrated a number of government agencies. The one that was striking to me, what I believe was a research lab out of the Department of Energy. And there were a number of other agencies that were impacted, including Commerce, DHS, State. It's going to come out in the coming weeks as more investigations, or the investigation continues, more agencies are going to be listed as impacted, more companies are likely to be listed as impact, and that's something that's going to need to be dealt with.
It's very political. Is it helpful that it's so political?
I would argue not. I think it's helpful to be aware of the politics, but at the end of the day, from a execution point of view, you need to go by what your intelligence is telling you. Your intelligence should never be politicized. And if your intelligence is telling you, we can say with 90% certainty, this is Russia based on XYZ, then you need to be guided by your intelligence. What you then do based on that intelligence, that's kind of the policy realm of things. That should be grounded in the facts of what your intelligence is providing you.
Kristen Monahan is a Cyber Vault Fellow at the National Security Archive with expertise in cybersecurity and technology policy. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. In Arizona, Trump is fast-tracking a copper mine near the San Carlos Apache Reservation in the Tonto National Forest. The mine would be owned by Resolution Copper, an investment vehicle for the Rio Tinto mining conglomerate. The area known as Oak Flats is sacred to the Apache people and would be totally destroyed by the mine, leaving behind millions in tons of waste. The head of the Sierra Club in Arizona is Sandy Baer.
All of this was facilitated by the late Senator John McCain helping to get a bill attached to another bill, a must-pass bill.
Is that what they call a midnight rider?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, tell us what it's called. What do they call that?
Yeah, we would call it a midnight rider because it was attached at the last minute to a bill that they knew would have to pass and they knew the president would have to sign. It was the National Defense Authorization Act, and there normally is very little opposition to it. So they attached this bill that we and many others had helped to stop in Congress for more than a decade. And they were able to get it attached onto this. And that's when it passed. The National Congress of American Indians has weighed in opposition to trading away Oak Flat and many of the tribal nations in Arizona as well. So there's a lot of opposition. And from the faith community overall, as people from many faiths recognize how deplorable it is that this is continuing to move forward, despite how important it is. It wouldn't be going this far if it weren't for that midnight rider. It's not in the public's interest. It is not an exchange that the Forest Service even wanted to do. Sometimes we object to land exchanges that the Forest Service proposes, but this is not something that it wanted to do. The Forest Service itself has said that the area is not replaceable, that they've looked around and they can't find a comparable area on the Tonto National Forest.
And that's Sandy Baer. She's head of the Sierra Club in Arizona. The Oak Flats copper mine had been put on hold decades ago because of the area's importance to Apache culture. The former chair of the San Carlos Apache Reservation is Wenzler Nosey Sr. He left the reservation last week and began his return to the Apache holy site at Oak Flat. He spoke with WBAI earlier today.
I informed the Tonto National Forest, the United States agency, that I'm leaving the reservation to go home because of their negligence. I went home to where we were exiled out of.
You can't go back to land that was yours even to this very day.
The reality of the law, that is somewhat very truthful. But as far as in the hope and the spirit and the belief to go home where my people originated from, it's really an indescribable feeling. It has to do with a lot of emotions and a lot of social illness from being a victim of the past.
When you're out there, are you staying in a camp?
Yeah, when I first got back, I stayed in a tent, then I stayed in a wikiup, then I have a teepee, and then I did bring in a travel trailer. The security level was really high as far as the protection for myself from some of the law enforcement telling me that staying in the tent is easy for them, someone to slice it with a knife. All the safety measures as far as how I could be harmed chemically too, because in the past of mining, a lot of people died from strange illness. So I had to take all that into precaution and make the best decision that I can make. But recently my trailer got broken into, so we had to take that out so that they could fix the doors. And so I'm back in the tipi.
That's terrible. Have you been threatened? And is there mining actually going on now?
The mining is going on. It's been going on. They're rushing right now because of Trump losing the election. They're worried about what the transition will be like with the new president.
What are folks going to do? Is this going to be like the Dakota Pipeline?
Right now, what I don't want to lose is the narrative of the whole thing, and that is the religious part of the Native people, which not only falls back on Native people, but it falls back on this country and the Constitution of the United States and the freedom of religion. To me, right now, that's under the microscope of all the people of America. And not only that, the laws that were violated by them giving exemptions to a foreign mining company, that's all in effect right now. So, you know, at one time I would say that it was an Apache fight, but now it's become, you know, from an Apache fight to Native Americans to Arizona fight to a country. It symbolizes everything that's ugly that we really need to fix in this country. I told people if they come to Oak Flats, you know, we've got to remember that we're talking about deities. We're talking about a holy place. And we have to come with that mind. The fight is really the mind and the spirit, you know, of what makes up the human race in the religious sense. So as far as all the different levels of protest, sure, we have them all. But mainly is that if we're going to change anything in this country, it's going to take conscience and it's going to take bringing us to all of a level of understanding and knowing that we're destroying this country and this holy place. So I really kept it spiritual. Everybody's welcome. I've had different people, religious people, activist people, just people in general. It's been well received. And I got to keep it that way because it affects all our children in this country.
It's interesting, this whole thing where Senator McCain came up with this Midnight Rider.
Well, you know, it goes back to the years prior when Resolution Copper with some of the congressional leaders of Arizona was trying to get Congress to give them the exemption. And I remember the very first day when we were knocking on doors in Washington when, you know, not many doors opened, but those that did were able to get in there and explain to them, and then to our senators and House of Representatives, that what the exemption does to the environment, what it does to the resources of America, and then what it does to the religion. It got to the point where we were more educating, but we were holding off Congress from giving them the exemption until House of Representative Gosar, Paul Gosar of Arizona, put it on the floor on the House, but we were able to have enough bipartisan support to where he didn't have the numbers, so pull off the floor. But then that's the following year that John McCain, being angry about it, came in and pushed the bill into the National Defense Bill as the late night rider, and that's how they got the exemption. It just seems like America built itself under a false foundation. We have to change the narrative. We have to change it, and this is the opportunity, and this is where we say there's a blessed opportunity, and Oak Flats represents all that ugliness of this country. Now it's time to fix it.
Wenzler Nosey Sr. is former chair of the San Carlos Apache Nation. The Apache people were forced from their mountainous lands in the late 19th century after a bitter people's war led by Geronimo and other Apache leaders. And closer to home, a new report finds the NYPD was caught off guard by the size and scope of the spring protests sparked by the killing of George Floyd. The report by the City Department of Investigation was released Friday. It says the cops resorted to aggressive disorder control methods, stoking tensions and stifling free speech. Mayor de Blasio has said he intends to incorporate the report's recommendations.
I wasn't taking anyone's word for it. Bluntly, I want to be really clear about this. Didn't take NYPD's word for it, or someone who opposed the NYPD's word for it, or anyone in between. I wanted an objective analysis of what happened, and that's what Department of Investigation provided. It is clear that tactics were used that should not have been used. They will not be used again. There should not be kettling. There should not be encirclement. As someone who has been in protests many a time as a protester, every peaceful protester deserves the opportunity. If they want to leave the protest area, they must be given that opportunity. If arrests are imminent, there must be clear constant reminders that that's about to happen. We don't accept and allow kettling or encirclement. You will not see it in the future. And if any police commander utilizes that tactics in the future, they will experience discipline and consequences.
And Mayor de Blasio, the Communities United for Police Reform, or CPR, spokesperson Antonin Pierre says the DOI report is good, but it doesn't tell the whole story.
This violence that was happening was systematic. It was happening at protests, big and large, right? Like, we were coming from a time where the protests were erupting all over the place, right? It wasn't just the big protests. And there was, from what we've heard from our members, there was police violence everywhere. For that to be reduced to one night shows one of the reasons why it's so hard for us to get discipline for officers.
Well, the idea that the police weren't prepared, that it was, took them by surprise, how does that strike you?
It's laughable, right? Because we're talking about the NYPD that has the technological advancement and the size surpassing the militaries of many small countries, right? To say that they didn't have a guess or an idea of what could happen, it really is a way of saying, look, we're not going to be responsible even when we were the ones doing the harm.
They seem to be following a playbook that leads to the idea of the cops being on one side or another in the fight politically.
What came out in the DOI report was so unmistakably damning that we saw the NYPD separate, like that we have the rank and file pointing at the top brass. Someone has to be held accountable. The reality is that the people who least want to be held accountable are the ones who are out on the street actually enacting the violence. This is one of the reasons why the most important next step here for us really is discipline for officers. Without that discipline, without that accountability, everything that de Blasio and the NYPD says just sort of falls flat.
The way they broke down the arrest by race, which is some protests was mostly white people and other protests was mostly people of color who were arrested, and depending on where they were and where they were treated. Did you get a sense of any difference in the way people were treated from those statistics?
There's police violence happening at many different kinds of protests, right? And I think that in particular, when we had protests where there were young black and brown folks where the majority of the folks at the protest, those are the places where we did see a lot of violence. And that plays into what we think about what happened that night in Mott-Haven. We did have a crowd of mostly black and brown folks. And the idea here is that no one is going to care if we hurt these people. If you were a white person in Flatbush, then what we saw was that some of those folks were more likely to be victims of police violence, as opposed to someone marching with all your West Village neighbors, and it's a mostly white crowd, right? So that proximity to black folks in particular and people of color more generally makes it, we see the NYPD acting out just in terms of protests that had large numbers of black and brown folks.
They hate supporters even as much as they do.
You should ask them, right? Apparently they didn't have orders. They didn't know what they were doing. So does this report go far enough? Definitely not, right? I think we're tired of getting reports and getting information that doesn't move towards disciplining officers.
And do you think they'll do anything? Anything will come of this report? Any changes?
I mean, that's a great question for the mayor, because he hasn't said that he'd be accountable for any substantive changes coming out of this report, so we'll see.
Antonin Pierre is spokesperson for Communities United for Police Reform. Mott Haven in the Bronx is where hundreds of peaceful protesters were arrested in a kettling operation that garnered criticism from Human Rights Watch. Talking about a potential eviction crisis on his weekly Mondays with the Mayor segment on Inside City Hall, Mayor Bill de Blasio reassured New Yorkers that his administration is working hard to make sure they can stay in their homes. But he said that in order to prevent an eviction crisis, it will be necessary to extend moratoriums until the economy comes back to life and people get their jobs back. He also said that state legislators need to come up with a plan that protects not just tenants, but also landlords. And that's some of the news for Tuesday, December 22nd, 2020. The news was produced by Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. From New York City, for the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for listening.